Station on the ground reporting. News as it happens. Yeah! Here I am, your main man reporting from Jam Jam. At 16,000 kilocycles FM and 1,000 megahertz on the ground. Yeah!
My name is Celeste from Catskill, New York, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Curtin family of Tivoli, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to the video rental store in your mind.
Looking for something to watch, but feeling overwhelmed by all the options?
Feeling unsatisfied with all the boring, restrictive categories like romance and drama or horror?
Tune in to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda every second and fourth Tuesday at 7 p.m. and get turned on to movie genres like eco-horror,
unsettling kids' movies,
alien boyfriends,
creepy therapy.
Start listening so you can start watching today.
This is Ginger Radio Hour. I'm Justin Maiman. And you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM in Acre and Hudson. Ginger, of course, is a show all about inspiration. And today on the show, we're celebrating Earth, perhaps the greatest of all inspirations. So, in honor of Earth Day, we'll take a long walk in Hortus Arboretum in Ulster County, where we'll get to meet some pawpaw trees and much, much more. But first, here's my favorite Catskills band, Florist, with The Birds Outside Sang.
Thank you. shoot up into the air. Do you and your friends want to come into the field and watch the fireworks shoot up into the air? Does the night sky terrify you, and does the day sky mesmerize you and make you dream things better than the day? Does the night sky terrify you, and does the day sky mesmerize you and make you dream things better than the day? Do you and your friends want to come into the field and watch the fireworks shoot up into the air?
No violence. I've got a story, ain't got no mother. Let the bad guy win every once in a while. When it go round in circles, when it fly high like a bird up in the sky. Like a bird up in the sky.
brim has showered far a drip, splash and trickle running. Plant has flowered in the sand, shell and pebble sunning. So begins another spring, green leaves and of berries. Chiff chaff eggs are painted by mother bird eating cherries. In a misty tangled sky, faster wind is blowing. In a newborn rabbit's heart, river life is flowing. So begins another spring, green leaves and of berries. Chiff chaff eggs are painted by mother bird eating cherries. From the dark and wetted soil, petals are unfolding. From the stony village kirk, Easter bells of old ring. So begins another spring, green leaves and of berries. Chiff chaff eggs are painted by mother bird eating cherries. Rain has showered far a drip, splash and the trickle running. Plant has flowered in the sand, shell and the pebble sunning. So begins another spring, green leaves and of berries. Chiff chaff eggs are painted by mother bird eating cherries.
That was Donovan, the track The Lullaby of Spring. And Billy Preston before that, Will It Go Round in Circles? Let's get now to our guided tour of Hortus Arboretum in Stone Ridge. Last spring, Allison Levy and Scott Serrano were kind enough to spend a whole afternoon showing me around their 21 acres filled with native and unusual plant life. Their book, Cold Hardy Fruits and Nuts, features 50 easy-to-grow plants for your home garden. And with that in mind, I took a long walk with Allison and Scott. Listen in.
This area is really called the Vlaai, which is a Dutch word for wetlands.
I drove through some on the way.
Yes.
So how do you, I mean, obviously you're keeping the deer out, but what about the birds? Like, are you battling for some of this fruit?
Sometimes it depends on the fruit and stuff. Some things they don't
Juneberry.
Juneberries.
I will go on a ladder for several hours and just, if it's the year, for some reason ours seems to be every other year that it's cropping, but it's still relatively young. But that fruit, because it does basically,
they love that,
and it ripens pretty
I'd
much.
I'd say that
at
blueberry. Blueberry is another thing.
We'll cover our blueberry.
We'll sometimes cover them, put like a almost like a build a phone booth over them using 2x2s, mm-hmm. and then put drape deer.
Although
fencing.
Last year we just did cloth, and that worked really well.
Yeah, and they
too,
didn't hit them too bad last year.
I would say Boomy, actually, birds. There's always nests in here, but There's so much, there's enough to make jelly. So we're fixing this. This is our original grape arbor with different Concord grapes.
These are persimmons. This is a meter.
That's a Zucchus. That's a much better quality fruit. It's really great.
Kind of butterscotch flavored. Ripened in the fall, September. They start to fall off a few at a time. And then these are all of our pawpaw trees. There's the ice storm. They got kind of broken. Some of the...
A couple of them got decapitated, unfortunately. And these are the flowers that are just starting out.
Flowers. And the pollen's not open. They have a little hard ball, and when they crack open, that cracks open, you can see the pollen in it, and they're not quite
probably in the next day or two when it's like 70 degrees.
Yeah.
So these also were some of the first trees that we put in the field, just because we knew how long they would take in terms of, you know, the taproot really doing its thing before you see any top growth.
So 20 years, maybe? 20
years
old?
Yeah, these fruited after, like, 12? 10, 12?
Yeah. After 12,
and they've been, and they've been growing for
since. These were little.
Yeah.
These were, like, little. And we had a couple more persimmon, but after a while...
2016.
How is that possible, Scott?
Yeah, that sounds wrong. It's probably 2006, actually.
That makes more sense because we got this in 2003.
And this one is 2004. You're right. That's probably 2006. Let's screw up.
And that's all Japan in there. We actually have wasabi. People say you can't grow wasabi. I don't know. We have wasabi. We had wasabi.
That's European pear.
No.
Quince.
You can tell we're tired from a long day.
There were pear trees here. We got rid of those.
They didn't do very well. And this is all currant.
Red currant, white currant.
Oh, and that's black currant. That's like some we picked from
the larger bush.
Yeah, this we picked like two or three. And
planted them a long time ago.
I love them. He's not a big fan. But then in front there, let's walk through this.
The Shapova.
That's the red one here, or the white on the left?
Yeah, the white one. Shapova is an intergenetic hybrid.
What is it, from the 1600s?
Yeah.
It was found in the 1600s.
It's a mountain ash crossed with a pear. It's a weird, it's a jumped genus. It's extremely rare. It's like a cousin species. Usually it's a pear crossed with another pear. This is one of the only... And we waited.
It's one of these trees. So after doing a lot of research about it, like, it's almost revisionist history, like learning about, like, oh, there was a gardener to this king in the 1700s who swore that he saw one on its own, and he took it and he put it to the king's garden, and then that fruited, and then, you know, 50, I'm just going off.
Yeah, it's been picked several times in history.
Yeah.
Because the seeds are sterile. So the only way to pass is by grafting it over and over and over. So from the 1600s up till now.
But that's not entirely true, because that was the weird thing that they found a couple seedlings throughout, not a lot, but like a handful over several hundred years. So it's and so it's complicated history. Also, it's like complicated fruit, right? Like, we literally waited
14 years.
Yeah.
We spit it out the first time we had it. We said, this is what people think is good. And then the last second year we had it, it was like, okay, this
is
better.
Years later,
I can see this is okay, but it's not a hyper productive great tree. It's a delicate aromatic small pear.
But either the third or the fourth time when we, and the fruit's small, it's like seckle pear sock. I was like, oh, I get it.
It's
very perfumey. It it had this quality that it's hard to name other than it had this very floral
And you can see the weird graft. see, it's like a mountain ash. It's a pear mountain ash hybrid stuck on a mountain ash. It has this weird, kind of odd Frankenstein thing joined together. You know, it's a collector plant.
Yeah.
It's not a, this will produce lots of fruit for you to cook and be useful.
Right.
It's a collector plant more than anything. And that's sea buckthorn, which is a great, but monster from hell kind of plant. What you don't see is that it's run 20 feet around us, a radius, that I pulled up the suckers, and you know, it just is hyper-aggressive.
That's
a sucker, and that needs to be brought up, and then I'm going to put boys, because the boys are being shadowed, and they're being killed, because these cannot take any kind of shade, they need to be in full sunlight, so I need to start one. We're going to get more stuff out of the way and let this kind of be a monster zone of this as a plant, because the berries are so incredible.
And I use the foliage, the leaves, for tea, which is has a similar flavor to like a red tea.
Mm.
Really, really yummy, both fresh and dried.
Yeah.
But the fruit, I mean, it's an important fruit.
Yeah.
It's a very pretty, you know, shrub. It's a nitrogen fixer. Where we're all standing way back when this used to be an asparagus bed. And like it had all this manure in it, and it was coming up. It's a monster.
Yeah.
So we kind of decided other than this, we're gonna kind of let this take it over.
Yeah,
it
is. See, here's one that I haven't pulled up. There you go.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's another one. Yeah, it's a monster.
So at some point, you, whatever else was here, you came in and you just dropped all this item 4, all this stone to...
Yeah.
Well, before this item 4, we did wood chips. So the first thing we did, is that we just laid... We must have laid cardboard down first over areas and started planting. And wood chips was free or not expensive, probably free, because we would get them from, you know, them doing the roads. And then I guess at a certain point we were like, oh, we're going to up our game and for aesthetics. Because as you know, when you have wood chips over 3 to 5 years, then it becomes just this great
soil
bed.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So this we've had for quite some time. As you can see, weeds are coming through. So it's time for a
redo. It needs
more. Yeah.
It's thin too. It's only an inch and a half. It needs more. Yeah.
And then behind you is flowering quince. Which
great.
We use the fruit, even though the fruit is not ginormous and it's full of seeds and there's not a lot of meat, but we'll use it to make a jelly.
A spicy cranberry lemon flavored jelly. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And that's the Mediterranean quince. That one's Tex. That's from Turkey. It produces a fruit tasting like pineapple and peach to me. It's actually the flowers there, but it's about the flower. Flower buds are starting. It looks like flower buds are going to start on that. Yeah, there they are, right there.
Yeah.
They're pink. Pink kind of candy cane striped. Wonderful.
Really pretty.
This is kind of a long, oblong kind of pear-shaped one. And the one over there is called Kagonskaya. That's from the Caucasus Mountains in Turkey. And you can eat these. These are from the ones that have been selected from orchards in like Anatolia and Turkey and Bulgaria for being able to pick and then bring in and then let soften up and then being able to cut and thin. And they're good, but quince cooked with sugar is divine. I think it's among the best things I've ever had. And that's not as good as raw. It's okay raw, but it's really, really good cooked.
Sometimes we get a little flack, like you need as much sugar as you have quince in order to get.
Yeah.
But okay, so that's where I'll take my sugar. That's fine.
Yeah.
So this is really a good mix of ornamental and edible plants.
And that's our first cactus bed.
Mm-hmm. And then when we were clearing things out, we noticed we had some really old high bush blueberries, so we kept that. Same across in the south garden. Like if we saw something that was worth keeping, especially food-wise, we did.
Yeah, like that high bush blueberry is obviously like 70 years old or something like that. I don't know how old it is, but that was here. So I kind of built around it. We just expanded the fence last year too. It used to be outside, so that's why there's kind of parts of fencing that have to be taken down. So, and I'm kind of just going around that. And we used to, because it was outside, I never got to pick the fruit to eat it. Now it's actually going to be inside, so we can actually now conceivably get some of the fruit.
You're fine. then this, I will mention it. So we do grow some prunus, and most of it's across the way, but, you know, like most people, we love our peaches and our apricots and our cherries, but we've struggled in so long. And this year, that's the last cherry tree that's standing. It's not going to be here much longer because we're going to instead expand the pitcher plant bog. But just pointing it out because, like, slowly, little by little, just, I don't know where you are, if you have success with prunus and not having brown rot or black nut.
I don't grow any of that on our land. But,
okay.
There's certainly lots of apples around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Prunus has got a... I always say to people that wild cherries are really important ecologically. They're all over everywhere. The difference between a wild cherry and a peach or a plum is minuscule. And there's about 150 pests that like wild cherries. So if you grow in a forest like this, it's only a matter of time before they come. So, and we've gotten down to the few. I have European plums because I collect. We have plums from the 1600s and 1700s.
We'll just see how long
and
we do.
And some of them have, and one of them produce fruit.
Yes.
You know,
delicious.
I'm much more now into like beech plums and things that don't need spraying and don't. And we like Nanking cherry, and that's been pest free. Although we just started getting a problem.
Might have some stuff.
So we're hoping our Nanking cherries now are going to be pest free because they're great. Sweet tart cherry.
Here, we can walk. We'll show you. The south garden has a lot of food.
So this was the first garden.
So this is the field garden. Each of the three gardens, major gardens, has edible plants in it. But this is the one place where our pawpaws and our... Well, we do have a persimmon across the way, but no pawpaws.
So this is where I used to keep all my propagation stuff. We had thousands of plants in piles. Now we've moved that. That's why there's these empty areas, because we wanted to get them. There's still a few potted things, but those are going to be moved.
Just for aesthetic. We used to have over here, too, a lot of Amelanchia, and we're slowly moving.
Juneberry just doesn't seem very happy here either. And there's another purple-leaved hazelnut. I'm going to probably dig that one up and move it back and replace the one that's kind of running out of steam. Because that's on its own roots as a wild.
Yeah, for the genetic diversity.
Yeah.
And then this was the original pathway. And last year our son was like, why don't we should have a nut? Like, it made more sense to, you know, and over time it becomes more of a garden than a, you know, getting from one place to another. And then last fall, we were able to purchase, there's 10 acres of land here, because we had heard a rumor that our really yucky neighbor might purchase it. And then, but that there was another builder who wanted to buy it and put two houses on it. So the guy who was selling it, although he didn't cut us a break, he held out for us until we can get our act together. Because he saw what we did with the South Garden. He was like, I would feel really bad if I came back up and saw two houses, but didn't see, like, I'd feel much better seeing that you guys put trees there. So that's a new development for us.
So that means you have 20 plus acres now?
21.
20.
Yeah. My goal is all of Mill Road. I tell my neighbor. We had neighbors thanking us for getting it. I don't know if it's happening in your neck of the woods, but areas are really being, like, built up. I get it. People want to live up here. It's such a beautiful place. But at the same time, too much carving out.
Yeah, so that's one, you know, I made kind of a top five list for things I'd like to try eventually, and that was one of them.
You can see here, you can see the flowers better over here.
We should put like a little couple stone steps to actually go in, Scott, too.
The flowers are pretty good.
They're very small.
Yeah, and so they're purple.
Yeah, we have three different cultivars, and these ones are
pollinated.
There's a white one, there's a reddish one. Yeah, see, I think this may be the different colored one. See, there's one that's like this, there's one that's kind of purple. There's three different vines, unique for cross-pollination. Don't get fruit all the time, just every once in a while.
I think because ours are sided in a part shade to shade. So, and that is the biggest thing that we hear from people who grow this in the sun. They're like, it's awful, it's invasive, and,
it's done everything. And this doesn't crawl that much.
It crawls, but
not invasively, like there's a little bit of it there. It's not rampant.
I mean, this is old. This is easily...
Yeah, 16 years old?
I was going to say 18, but okay, yeah. 16's fine.
Yeah.
I really like this the trellis kind mm-hmm. of idea you've done here. That's great.
Yeah, I want to put more up. Stick a couple more. Keep it going up. Let it climb.
So what will happen if you don't, if it doesn't have anywhere to go up, it starts to fall over?
Fall over and kind of regrow into itself. I guess that's okay for now. But yeah, I would like to get a thin piece of 10 more feet and screw it in a couple places and give it another, let it run a little bit further.
Sure.
You made it up in the fridge?
Yeah, I did. Okay. That sounds
dirt.
Like Emmett.
Dirt all over.
You can go.
Okay.
The other side. And then back there we have a Stewardia collection and more hydrangeas. I'm trying to think what else. Calocampus. You gonna come? Come on, Georgie, let's show them. Let's show them around. Come on, Georgia, you can come. Okay. Come on. So this is 8 acres, and this was all wooded. And our neighbor knew down there that we were interested, and the timing was amazing because we had just about planted. I think that at that point we had started putting gravel and we were, doing open houses. So we could see how people moved through the space wasn't working. Things were super tight. So we like to say this is the most organized of, but I'm not sure that that's true anymore. So I'll walk you over. Here. Those are we have three different Korean pine trees.
Oh, that's on my top five list.
Mm-hmm. I think they're
beautiful.
They're beautiful. They look like white pines. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They offer the same screening. And then, if you're patient, they will produce nuts.
And you've gotten nuts?
We have not. We had one cone a while back. So the story about these is that supposedly they fruit when they're about 5 feet in height, 5 to 6 feet. So we did have a cone, but we weren't quick enough. And then we're hoping that this is the year. It takes 2 years for the for a cone to be produced. So
and a cone is what produces the nut.
Exactly.
Eventually?
Yeah, just like a pinyon pine or any of those. It's So cross fingers that happens. The thing with this too is you can't get this locally, right? And so everything's mail order and they're all like this big and they're expensive and people don't get it. But we push this plant. I think it's a great.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
They're beautiful. They're really beautiful. We even grow wine berries, but because that's technically illegal by the USDA, we didn't write about them, but such a great. This is one of our American Dunstan chestnuts. You can see the burrs still from last year. So we have a sad story about this. which was, I'd say, last year. This is one of our old sassafras trees. She lost a humongous limb, and she went right down on what was our other chestnut that is sprouting. So we didn't have necessarily a reliable pollinator, and then we just put in another one. So this just started sprouting, so there will be some sort of fight between Scott and I of what we can keep or not keep. Because even though, we have to be thoughtful about spacing and limbing things up, but getting to the nuts, and it's a great, we love the nut of this. The flavor's delicious. So good. And produces nuts at a really early age for a nut tree, which is kind of cool. Even though I just said that with Korean pine, they start producing cones. I'm not sure if the actual pine nut is, like, just because something produces a cone doesn't mean that it's actually fruiting. Just like the Shapova gave us flowers for several years before we actually ever saw fruit. Just wasn't ready. The maturation point. And then we have a lot of different hazelnuts. This is considered an ornamental. It's the European one. But because it's so old and it's around other friends, it does produce very teeny hazelnuts, which is kind of cool. So we have two of those. And then this is a Chinese hazel that's unfortunately now in China is rare because they just have been deforesting lots of different areas. It's not rare in botanic places. It might be rare in people's backyards. But it's definitely a very beautiful hazelnut. And then we have some that are the crosses that were done at some of the stations. Like this is Geneva. We have a slate where the nuts are larger. They've been crossed and bred and very sweet, very prolific. We moved this, believe it or not, it was in between. This is about learning how things grow and being anxious and wanting to put everything in. So this is actually, we moved that one behind this. This, just watch this up. This we moved to give more space. And you could also see around, like, we left tree stumps, and we are working on a grant right now so that we perhaps can do some pathing, which would be super important because we do have people who want to come with disabilities, and right now this is like...
Of course, it's hard to get around.
It's hard to get around, like a wheelchair. And then... Go, Georgia, get the bunny! Get the bunny, Georgia!
Oh, I don't think Georgia's going to get that bunny. I think the bunny's safe.
Yeah, but it's fun for her. Even in her youth, she couldn't get a bunny, so the other one could. This is an almond tree.
Oh, the flowers are beautiful.
They're beautiful, right? It flowers still fairly early. I should take these mums off. But it doesn't seem to be... I guess we haven't had that hard of a frost that I've lost stuff. It produced almonds last year. They're the bitter ones, so you have to cook them first. And I did cook them, and they were empty. Because we don't give extra irrigation, and when you have a dry summer, or it goes through an extended, couple of weeks without having any rain, that happens with all nuts. So that's just something to kind of keep in mind as you're growing, like, oh, okay, July's dry, let's give a little extra, let's put a bag or a flag or something that reminds us that we're going to hit this with water. We will water new arrivals, and we put flags so that we know, but after that, for trees and shrubs, they're on their own. But it was great. I mean, it had a lot, so I'm hopeful now I'll know, okay, this will need water if it's very dry. The same with some of our hazelnuts, actually. So
you can grow stuff, and then, but how do you, you know, then you got to keep on it, right? What's going to make
something really fruit? That's why even the difficulty ratings in the book, too, that we kind of tried to caution people.
It's easy, but some things need a little bit more attention than others. And then now this is more, we tried to make this like a sun native with some rare stuff here, but I'll bring you up to this. It's not even in leaf yet, but this is one of our favorite native. This is a mulberry tree. And this is an Illinois everberry. We highly recommend this. This is actually very young. This is probably 7 years here. We had an original one where Scott showed you in the field where there was a mulberry. Mm-hmm. We dug that up with like 20-foot root systems, ridiculous. Planted it here, but we missed when we put it in. We were being super careful, but one started to curl around. So that's the thing about mulberries. Their root systems grow so fast, so they tend to strangle themselves.
And that's what happened?
That was the death of the first one. But the fruit of this is so freaking good. We're like, okay, we got to get another one.
And it's quite, it must be, what, 20, almost 20 feet tall.
Yeah. It's probably 6 or 7 years old. So not that old. But very reliable, and you can have a big spring bounty, and then again, that's why the ever-bearing, you'll get a smaller crop really right through August. Tastes, has a sharp acidic flavor in a lovely way, as opposed to like, you know, some mulberries could be very sweet and insipid.
Would you call this native? Like, would you run across this in this region?
Not the Illinois ever-bearing. I mean, that's a good question. Scott probably would know better, because this did come from, what's the name? I think it came from the Morton Arboretum, that it might have been like a choice. He'll know. I don't know that.
Hey, Scotty. The Illinois ever-bearing, is that considered like a true native?
Mm.
Okay.
And nobody made it. It's a hybrid.
It is, okay.
Yeah. Wonderful.
This is
one of my favorite fruit trees.
Beach plum head right here.
And flower.
And go through it, you can see it better. Aronia. These are gorgeous when the flowers.
Now?
Yeah. Oh, why don't we do it when we sit?
Okay, where are we going to sit?
So we can take toward the kiwi.
Huh?
Toward the kiwi.
Okay. Yeah, there's a seat in there? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll put it in there right now.
Okay. Just so you get a better sense. So, this is a beach plum hedge.
This we did cover with like ag cloth. I mean, we don't cover the whole thing. There's no possible way, but a big portion. And we love the fruit. It's variable. Some taste better than others.
And you put each of those in, or did that spread naturally?
No, we put them in, yeah. We put them in.
And then magically, somehow, here's Bumi again. We're in China. This is actually a seedling that we got from the other gumi out there. But we were saying it's very rare that you have a lot of seedlings. I mean, this is like one of seven in the whole time that we've been growing it. Asian pear. This is grafted with three different cultivars on a European pear, and then it just, so one of the grafts was lost, so we're lucky we have European pear as well on here, which is kind of cool. This is the Nanking cherry Scott was mentioning. I pruned, I got rid of one, and I really whacked them down because they started having
some disease. We can't figure it out yet. So
this is getting fruit. Fruit's developing.
So
we're hoping.
Hopeful.
This year that we got rid of the.
That it was environmental or.
Yeah.
Not sure. This is all, except for her, all gooseberries.
That's
here.
One currant.
One pink champagne currant. All different varieties. Love them.
This is the.
This is Flying Dragon.
Flying Dragon. This is citrus.
It's interesting, not a lot of flowers in this section in here. Mm. It's true of a lot of things, actually.
Although, no,
even the pear.
Some here.
Yeah, but not as much. Look down, babe.
Yeah.
But it's even like I'm looking at the pear, like it's, well, that could be the cultivars. It's a handsome.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I've never seen anything like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hooked thorns. It's the Flying Dragon is the contorted form of the normal one. It's a crude citrus, a sour orange. You can make marmalade with it and stuff.
How big are the fruits?
Small, they're like about like that. You know, inch and a half,
yeah,
three
like
quarters.
I can juice, what, like 60 and get maybe a quarter of a cup of juice.
But it's you can get more than that. You can get more than that. You always just like to downplay that.
You're not the one squeezing it.
There is
full of seeds.
Oh, yeah, I have.
It's true.
But yeah, it's not. It's a crude. It's more for zest. The zest is better. And
although I make marmalade and then I take also the orange slices and put it in honey, which is very traditional Japanese
way. It's aromatic, yeah.
And then honey berries up here, probably the fruit
forming. Yeah,
yeah,
you can see them.
Oh, yeah.
They kind of hide inside the bushes.
And do they get a lot bigger, the actual berries?
Yeah.
Yeah,
here are the flowers.
Mm-hmm. You know, like half an inch, three quarters of an inch, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a baby that was an accident. That's going to be our own cultivar.
We got an accident, baby.
It got thrown. The seed got over there and was growing, so we don't know what it. We'll see what it's going to be like.
What it is, yeah. Because there's early and late versions. The late ones tend to be from Japan, and then the earlier ones are more like
Siberia and the Canadian tundra, mm-hmm. like the open.
European pear right here that Scott's been contrast bellying.
It needs to be cut back.
And then
magnolia's booming.
We have this rootkeeper fig and an Asian persimmon.
Which isn't hardy here, this Asian persimmon.
Oh, but the Tibetan chocolate berry, it's just been whacked down. She's in here too. That's in the book. Because it has hollow stems, which you can kind of see. We originally had this planted like in this area here. And one year, we covered it well with mulch, but one year we got tricked and we took the mulch off and then we got like a freeze and it just killed it after growing, a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I just like this plant so much. So I was like, let's put it in the greenhouse, which we did. And it became a bit
huge.
Of a monster,
yeah.
Like almost too much. But it's the hollow stems that get that cold air. So part of the trick now is leaving as much of the plant up. So I did do a layer, but I must have screwed up because I don't see it. Or someone weeded it out or whatever, because I wanted to try putting a piece and testing. So we try at least to do a lot of that. This is Che.
Che.
Oh, that's on my list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's wonderful.
So it's not, it has no leaves yet.
Not yet. Late.
It's early.
It's funny, I said late, you said early. It's like the mulberry, it's in the same family as fig. None of those are really leafed out. The fig is just starting from the bottom, but probably because it's in a greenhouse. And then over here, we'll go this way, and then we can sit in our tzatziki dome. What are you doing? Get your bone? Did you get your bone?
Buckeyes here.
What's that, love?
Buckeyes.
Yeah, buckeyes, magnolias, viburnums are up there. I was going to show him. This is
jujube.
Thank you.
It hasn't leafed out yet.
We have a couple of these.
About three of them. They've been okay. They've grown all right. They're just temper.
It's funny when you look at this though, hon.
What?
How dark, like just that black.
The pine cone. Yeah, the growth. Yeah. This is another edible. This is tuna.
Yeah. This will be
is
in the
mahogany.
Next
book. Yeah, this has got leaves. It tastes like garlic and onions and walnut. They're stir-fried and put in omelets. It's a traditional Chinese. It's subtropical. This grows in Thailand, actually. And here it kind of dies back and shoots. And in tropical jungles, this becomes like a 150-foot tree. Here it's kind of dies back and shoots. And although this is pretty good.
No, I see some stuff
they survive,
happening higher
but,
up. So.
But this is interesting.
And then you clip off the leaves in order to...
Yeah. It has a mild, like I said, onions, garlic.
And then we found that really great caterpillar on it a couple years ago.
A saddleback caterpillar. It's the first time I've ever seen it, which is the most venomous sting of all the insects in the Northeast. It's fluorescent green. It has poison.
It looks like
colors.
It has a saddleback on it.
It produces
wild.
A sting that's considerably stronger than a wasp. It's quite formidable. They're tiny little, they're slugs. Limicods are Limex is Latin for slug. There's a group of caterpillars that evolved to lose their legs, and they secrete a film of slime, liquid silk, like a slug and move around, but they're not slugs, they're caterpillars. And they all have that group has day-glow psychedelic colors that say, I am poisonous, you better not get near me. They're like the way monarchs are orange, they have their mark for poison. It's just remarkable to see it. And what this is really interesting down here, I don't think it's starting out. There's a ginger that's hardy. It's edible.
Oh yeah, I don't think that's up yet.
No, it's going to be one of our favorite discoveries. And it's just, they're not, see, I don't, that's not it. They're just not quite up. It's Miyaga ginger. See, it hasn't come up. It wants the heat. We had it for about eight years.
Probably, I would think, by the end of the this weekend, because it's supposed to get like a couple like high 70 days.
The shoots come out, and then you eat the flowers. You don't eat the rhizomes. The flowers stick up about this high, and you cut them off, and they have a ginger flavor. Those are harvested. It's considered a delicacy in Japan. I think this is from China, but Japanese people really embraced this and fell in love with it. I mean, there's like 10 species of zingiber. Zingiber officinalis is what you get in a supermarket. And this is zingiber miyaga. So there's 10 species of ginger. They're all in China. And then zingiber miyaga is in China, Japan, and Korea. It's suspicious to me that it's Japanese. I think Japanese people took it and planted it all over the woods there and fell in love with it. That's where Chinese people, it's not the same thing.
It's like
thing.
They naturalized it at this point.
So they say it's a native to the woods, but I don't think it's native to the woods here. It's a wonderful, wonderful plant. It comes second week of August. You eat the flowers, and then they start until frost. So we pickled them and canned them in like pickled ginger. And mm-hmm. It's been great to cook for stir fries. It's great.
But it's not woody like the ginger you get.
No,
it's a soft flower.
Because that's the root that you're eating.
Yeah,
don't eat the root of
the
this.
The root's kind of stringy and small. Yeah. All the energy is put to the flowers. And the flowers, when they crack open, they become like orchids. But until then, they're in a little bud. And you crack and eat the bud, so you have something to kind of cook with. So it's the bud that you're eating. Yeah, this is another. There was one, dead man's fingers. Weird. This is a cousin of Akebia. And it produces this kind of honey kind of jelly that you eat and pop in your mouth, but it's edible. I don't know.
Most people loved it. We've had people come just to try it, and I was like, what do you think? She's like, I love this. Okay.
They're a dark metallic blue. They look like dead man's fingers, actually. And that's a dried one from last season that didn't get, fall. It didn't fall.
I hope you're now inspired to go dig in the earth and work on your garden. Thanks for listening to Ginger Radio Hour. Find more info about this show and Hortus Arboretum on Tumblr and on WGXC.org. Hiroshi Yoshimura will take us out
with a track from the album Green, Happy Earth Day.